Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network. Hello, welcome to Cunning Cast with me, Tony Robinson. Right, so this is a history podcast, and I genuinely believe that you can find a fascinating history in anything if you look hard enough. And looking in the mirror was the start for this one, because it's men's facial hair, which is very prone to fashions, moustaches and beards are back in, so I'm told, but I was wondering why that is, and where does all this facial hair fashion come from? Well, to help me out with my beardy history, I found me a facial hair historian in the person of Dr. Alan Withy.
It is interesting that beards or facial hair often become an issue when masculinity or gender is somehow being debated. So, for example, the mid-19th century is a time when there are great fears that men are being weakened by modern life, and that British men are not going to be able to fight a war, and that somehow modern life has emasculated them.
And also a male grooming influencer to bring in the modern perspective. It's the man for himself, Mr. Robin James.
It's really interesting actually about this sort of rejecting the norms and rejecting what's expected of you, because we actually saw this during COVID, you know, when guys weren't going into offices and when they weren't expected to dress in a certain way from working from home. The largest search in the past 5 years for shaving was when lockdown was announced in the UK, and that was the highest search on Google Trends.
But before we get to that, Melissa, my producer, is here for a chat. Hiya, Melissa.
Hi, Tony. We are doing the history of facial hair only on Cunning Cast, Tony.
It's funny. I doubt whether anyone else is doing that.
Is there another podcast that has done it?
Probably not.
I really hope
probably
not.
Probably no one else would want to, but we do.
We've taken this on as a challenge, and it was a challenge, wasn't it? It was like, well, where do we find a facial hair historian?
I think this was the one where you had to search hardest to find the two people that you really wanted to take part in it. And I was constantly challenging you about content, wasn't I? But I'm really pleased with what we've come up with, I have to say.
And tell me about your relationship with facial hair. Do you go to the barbers? Do you get shaved? How does it work for you, Tony?
Not now. My wife puts the electric razor on a 2 and just goes over my head. And then she chops off the little bit she missed with scissors, which is fair enough, I think, in the autumn of your life.
Did you used to go for a shave at the barbers? Was that?
I never went for a shave at the barbers because I hated the cutthroat razor. I hated the safety razor. I had this really quite tender neck, and it always used to come up in huge rashes. So I've always used an electric razor, and quite frankly, I think they're virtually identical now to the ones that were around 60 years ago when I first started using them.
Well, that is a question to ask our historian.
It is, isn't it? I remember the first time I shaved. I used to have, when I was about 12 or 13, this little soft dark tash. And my dad would peroxide it because I was a child actor. I was on the telly and he thought that, you know, if I'd got a big moustache, it kind of wouldn't work. So my first impression of adult facial hair was being peroxided, which was pretty horrendous. But then he bought me a Philips filler shave as a big treat. And I started shaving, and I just didn't like it. It just got in the way. It just took time out of the day. And ever since, I've viewed my facial hair as just as a kind of nuisance that had to be dealt with. And Alan, you're nodding. An awful lot of people feel like that, don't they? Except in the last 10 or 15 years, suddenly it's become a thing for men, a thing for men to play with, a thing for men to assert themselves with. Robin, it's become your living. It just seems a huge jump for me. So I just wanted to talk about that, really.
Facial hair is something which is a huge part of men's identity. Having it, not having it, what you're going to do with it. And it's incredible. I mean, I've been online for the past 10 years talking to men about male grooming and skin, hair care, fragrance and shaving. And it has changed so much in the last 10 years. I think really about choice and what men can do. And with facial hair, you know, it's a huge part of the identity. Shaving, not shaving, having facial hair, not having facial hair, and all the tools that are out there, like on the high street, razors, electric shavers, and being able to customise. It's just the market has exploded.
Have you noticed this great leap forward?
Absolutely. I mean, as a historian, we always deal in the past, right? But it's impossible to escape it when the subject of your research is current. And I often get accused of latching onto the back of the beard trend for my research, but I started it before, so it was a happy accident for me.
One thing that stands out for me is that you don't have a beard. I don't have a beard. Would you call what you've got a beard? That sounded very offensive. I didn't mean it in that way.
I mean, you could ask that. No, this would be stubble. And I used to have a big curly handlebar moustache. And I remember in the time that I had that, the amount of comments I'd have that. But now you see so many guys with the big, thick sort of 80s chevron moustache. But no, this is not a beard. We'd call it maybe a beard stash.
Why did you grow a handlebar moustache?
Why did I grow that? I mean, that's a really good question. I actually have it now on my desk. I cut it off when I was getting rid of it, so it's a bit of a weird thing on the desk. But I had it because I wanted to experiment with facial hair. I wanted to see what products were out there for the audience, and I quite liked it as a sort of calling card.
It's quite strange that you were able to make a living out of this recognition that men's facial hair was going to be something so commercial. How did you get into it?
First of all, I worked in TV. I was a broadcast journalist. I'd worked online creating content. I then saw that people were creating these channels, YouTube channels, about various things. There were so many women that were creating things about beauty, and I just thought, no one's actually doing it for men. I had loved going up to the high street in my lunchtime when I was at school and buying loads of products and experimenting, and I thought, let's just do this online. So I did that, and then suddenly turned it into a career.
So it must have been just a hobby first. You must have had a few hundred followers.
Yeah, very much just a hobby, a couple of hundred followers, and now it's grown across YouTube, across the website, TikTok, Instagram. And you've seen that the market has grown. Actually, the market is worth $115 billion by 2028, and that was at $80 billion in 2022. So it is, it's moving all the way up.
Online entrepreneurs always do this thing of saying, I had this idea and I went online and suddenly I'd got 100 trillion followers. There must have been a route that you had to follow.
Yeah, I mean, for every idea that worked, there must be about 100 that didn't. But really, it's the how-tos and the tutorials. That's where I built an audience. Men want to know how to do things and they want a prescription. So do this in 5 easy steps and use these products. And that's exactly how I think this market has grown, because people are looking for this content.
Give me an example of a how-to that you've got.
Yeah, so one of my biggest ones is how to create a quiff. So in that one, there's a couple of easy steps with a mousse, a hairdryer, and then a lot of hairspray. But other ones, and the biggest trending videos, are always in product reviews. So clays, putties, pastes, what to do and how to do it.
We'll come back more closely later on. The quiff, what's that, 1950s, I suppose?
Yes, the pompadour is called as well, isn't it? Yeah, I've never had one myself. I think my day has passed, but yeah, that's an interesting one.
It came from Madame de Pompadour.
Well, there we go.
She had the big pompadour, and then it sort of worked down into men.
Yeah. Mm. Where should we start historically?
So my research focuses on Britain and Europe, really. And I think a good place to start is the middle of the 17th century, because it's a nice little story to tell, which might spoil our neat idea of what we think beards are. So back in the 17th century, the people believe in the four humours still. And under that model, beard hair is actually regarded as a form of excrement. And as remarkable as it might sound, the idea is that it's a waste product like anything else, earwax, snot and such. And it's actually a kind of leftover heat from the production of sperm deep in a man's body. So it rises up through the body, it breaks out on the skin and solidifies, and then that's what basically forms beard hair. So it does put a little bit of an uncomfortable slant, doesn't it, on when you tell somebody their beard is essentially excrement.
So presumably there wouldn't have been many beards around at that time.
Well, actually there were quite a lot of beards around mid-17th century. Charles I is still about, still attached to his head at least for the first part of the century, and has his Van Dyke beard, the very distinctive pointy beard. Lower down the social scale, it's cheaper and easier not to shave, so people grow beards. But as we go through the century, a lot of moustaches around as well.
But you'd have thought if people knew they had a face full of shit, they really would have wanted to get rid of it, wouldn't you?
You would have thought, so it didn't seem to put them off.
How quickly did styles change at that time?
Unusually, because it doesn't often happen where change comes exactly, neatly at the start of a century. But it is at the start of the 18th century, really, when facial hair just disappears from faces of men across Europe because of changing ideas about masculinity. And that's the point which heralds a clean-shaven age that lasts for about 120 years.
When you say changing idea of masculinity, what was that change, and why did it reflect itself in getting rid of your beard?
Well, it's to do with new ideals about how they think a man should look. So if we think of the 18th century as the age of the polite gentleman and the dandy and the fop and those kind of caricatures, it's a very neat, elegant age, and something about facial hair becomes rustic and inelegant. So if you were stubbly, you were likely to be regarded as just in off the turnip truck. So you go to your society ball and to your for a promenade around the park with a clean-shaven face.
Did the idea of the dandy, the smooth-faced dandy, seem to come in very quickly, or did it just happen gradually over a couple of decades?
Seems to develop gradually, because there are sort of debates about, especially those two, the extremes, the macaroni, the fop, the dandy, because they're very much a feminine side of masculinity. And it's a kind of contradiction that in order to try and look more manly, men are removing their, in quotes, natural facial hair and making the faces smoother and look more feminine.
Of course, in those days, there were no electric razors.
No, indeed. So if you were going to be shaved, it would generally be by a barber.
Mm. Let me interrupt you there. You say a barber, but my history tells me that a barber really wasn't quite like a barber today.
No, there's lots of different types of barber, thanks to Henry VIII, who puts the barbers and the surgeons together in a company in the 16th century, and so they remain until 1745. But yes, you have the barber, who is, well, actually defined originally as specifically a shaver. And in fact, in one dictionary I found, defined as a man who shaves another man for money, which makes it all sound a bit seedy, doesn't it? Mm. But the barber would do a lot of, let's call them bodywork tasks. So they would shave you, they would scrape your tongue, scrape the earwax out, lance your boils, do lots of little tasks. Then you have the barber surgeon, who's a hybrid, who will do little bits and pieces of surgery as well as the shaving. Then you have the surgeon, who is what we think of as the more meaty operations, if we can put it that way.
That colourful pole that indicates a barber, that's related to what you've just described, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a long sort of tradition, isn't there, that it's the blood and the bandages. There's very little evidence for it. In fact, I found it's the 17th century, sometimes the poles were blue and white, perhaps signifying the vein, because of course barbers are blood letters as well. But yeah, it's a very vibrant culture of medical practice, that is.
You're listening to Tony Robinson's Cunning Cast with me, Tony Robinson, and today I'm celebrating facial hair through history with two guys in the know, the facial hair historian Alan Withy and the man for himself, Robin Jones. This notion of shaving giving you some kind of added masculinity, is that around today?
It most definitely is. I actually asked a couple of barbers that I know about what people are asking for at this time, and they said that the one key thing was that men wanted facial hair to make their jaws look more masculine. So it was about squaring things off. So really to kind of heighten those things that you think of as masculine. But the interesting thing too is a lot of men are doing this themselves at home now. So while you were saying, Alan, you know, people were going in to a barber, I asked my audience who are in the US and the UK, and 84% said that they were shaving themselves at home, whereas 10% are going into a barber. So we're doing so much of this ourselves and looking at trends and at celebrities and models and kind of copying that.
That's odd, isn't it? Because for a lot of women that I know, actually going to the hairdresser is a big social occasion. And when I've gone to pick up my wife, they're drinking Prosecco, they're eating small sandwiches, they're reading fancy magazines, whereas we're staying at home hacking at our faces.
Well, it is a thing. And some of the barber shops, especially the ones that you're paying slightly more for, if it's a fiver or £10 to get your hair clippered, you're not going to be getting a beer or a whiskey on arrival. But in some of the other ones that you're paying for an experience, you're getting all of that. But also there is a community there, and so many barbers now are actually having first aid mental health training. So it means that they're using that as a way to talk to their client. And that's really quite fascinating. You know, it is about building this community around hair and around shaving.
What do you mean they're having first aid mental health training?
So a lot of the time, men in a chair are talking to their barbers about issues and problems and their family life and stuff that they're just not talking to anyone else about. These barbers are being trained to understand any of the signs of mental health problems and are there to help them, sort of point them in the right direction.
That's extraordinary, isn't it? I remember one of the first rude adult things I knew about was that a barber would say, would you like something for the weekend, sir?
Yes.
Does that still happen? Alan, you just perked up then when I said that.
Yeah, I was nodding at a different bit, actually.
Okay, carry on.
So it's really interesting what Robin was saying there, because in history, the barbershop was exactly that. It was a meeting place for men and lower class men, where you could go and you could have your hair cut and your shave, but they would often have musical instruments in the barbershop for customers to play as they waited. They would serve them drink, and they would also try and flog them food. And I did a lot of work on what are called probate inventories, the lists of what were in people's shops when they died. They often had a lucrative sideline in bread, butter, ale. And yeah, it's just really interesting, isn't it? The barbers again become this kind of meeting place for men.
There's the downside of hair, which is the little animals that can skip around in it. Was the idea of shaving your head and putting a wig on to do with sort of trying to get rid of head lice and those kind of things?
It's a weird paradox, actually. You shave off your natural hair and clap on a wig that's made of the sort of clippings assembled from what's come off the heads of the poor. So, you know, you've got that. It's not generally washed, it's powdered. So, yeah, it's as much as it's sometimes a health thing, because there are conditions that they would recommend shaving the head for. But generally, it's a fashion thing.
We'd got to the 18th century, hadn't we? And we'd got to the idea of fops and dandies and clean faces. When we get to the Victorians, my whole image of the Victorian man, or at least the older Victorian man, is an incredibly unkempt beard and the guy kind of leaning over, studying, making the world better with his brain and with his beard.
Yeah, I mean, the Victorian period gives us nothing less than the beard movement. As it's described at the time, it starts with this sort of little halting moustache movement, and very quickly they say, no, let's go the full hog, and they start growing these massive patriarchal beards, they're sometimes called, and cathedral beards. But again, because of new ideas about what a man should look like and what they should be.
What do you think it did represent? When I started doing Time Team, which it must be about 25 years ago, all the male archaeologists had beards. Scruffy beards, beards that they didn't trim, and I think they would have thought of it as really rather appalling or a betrayal of their beard had they did try and hack at it. And that seemed to me at the time to be about a yearning for some kind of authenticity, some kind of metaphor for freedom. If you were in a university, as most of them were, kind of not dressing straight but dressing a little bit like a hippie, all those things seemed to be packaged into the fact that they all had beards. I may be entirely wrong, but that's how it seemed to me.
Well, I think Robin could probably speak to today better than I can, but often there's a couple of things that are consistent when there are beard trends. One of them is a rejection of what's gone before. So if you have a long period of beardlessness, you often then go the other end of the spectrum. But
It is interesting that beards or facial hair often become an issue when masculinity or gender is somehow being debated. So, for example, in the mid-19th century is a time when there are great fears that men are being weakened by modern life, and that British men are not going to be able to fight a war, and that somehow modern life has emasculated them. They're being confined together in enclosed spaces and offices. One of the chief models for the beard is the Crimean War soldier, and also people like Albert Smith, the guy who climbs Mont Blanc and makes a bit living out of telling people about it, and these kind of very outdoorsy Victorian explorers. So in order, if you're the little guy sitting in the office, to look, make yourself look more outdoorsy, you grow the beard. So there's that. I think it still works today, because we're now in a period of gender flux. Sometimes beards spike when there are female monarchs in Britain. Is there a connection with that?
Yeah, it's really interesting actually about the sort of rejecting the norms and rejecting what's expected of you, because we actually saw this during COVID, you know, when guys weren't going into offices and when they weren't expected to dress in a certain way from working from home. The largest search in the past 5 years for shaving was when lockdown was announced in the UK. And that was the highest search on Google Trends. That was head shaving, it was how to shave at home, it was haircuts. You know, guys were looking to do it all. But you also saw guys who were clean shaven going into an office who wanted to experiment with growing a beard because they didn't have to have forward-facing client meetings or growing their hair out to try different things. So we had lots of different opportunities to try completely different things because there was less of an expectation.
One of the problems with beards, it's always seemed to me, is the egg that you get in them.
Mm-hmm.
We're still confronted by that problem, presumably, and you've got tips about how to cope with it online.
I certainly do. When I had the little handlebar moustache, I always remember it was a sponge for absolutely everything. The next morning you would taste whatever you'd had the night before. But this sort of the beard hygiene is a huge thing. The growth in those sort of products and cleansers and oils is massive.
Like what? What sort of things do you...
Beard oils are always things that people are asking for. And so many of the big brands, if you think premium, you're thinking Tom Ford Grooming. They had a huge line of beard oils and they went along with the private blends. So the Oud Wood, Tobacco Vinny, they created all these. Then a lot of niche brands like beard brands who came along and created all these different oils. But a lot of it is things that people can just kind of slap on and use for scent and also for conditioning, because you've got to think about the skin under the beard. That's when you get flakes. So actually using something that can conditioning is good for not only the beard shine but also for the skin underneath it.
Would there have been cosmetics for men's faces in times past?
There were, and in fact it's actually, we can take it right back to the 18th century, because that roughly second half of the 18th century is the first time in history that, as far as I can tell, that you can, first time I can see products advertised specifically for men who shave themselves. That's because there are new types of razors in the 18th century, but you start getting shaving paste, shaving creams, sweetly smelling cosmetic products. Victorian period, though, that expands, and you start getting some of the brands, that big brands that are with us today. Pears soap starts in the 19th century. Yeah, so it's been of long duration. Aftershave is later, but the shaving products actually come first.
Earlier on, you mentioned the sharp knives that people used to cut their beards with. When did the cutthroat razor come in? Presumably, that must have been a new technology at the time.
Yes, and it's a new type of steel that comes in the 18th century, makes the whole thing a lot more comfortable, because before then, there were steel razors, and they were kind of that. They were called open razors or clasp razors. But there's all sorts of stories about them being like oyster knives. You see caricatures in the 18th century. They're called hog scrapers, and they used to shave you with cold water. So, you know, if you've ever had a shave with a cutthroat, that would be a horrible experience. And you mentioned actually that you, when you first shaved, you used a filler shave. I did the same thing and didn't use any lotions or preparation, and my face was suppurating for quite a while after. Yeah. But yeah, it is that idea of men suddenly start to take ownership of something that's been the barber's domain.
Did we leap straight from the cutthroat to what I think of as the safety razor?
No, there's probably a good 100 years or more between the two. And a lot of men, when I say men starting to shave themselves, we'd be talking elites, and we'd be talking, you know, people with a good bit of money, because for the majority of the people in Britain, it's cheaper and easier to go to the barber still, well into the 19th century.
But with a cutthroat?
but with a cutthroat. Yeah.
So when does the safety razor come in?
Well, it's King Camp Gillette, the exotically named King Camp Gillette that invents it. And if memory serves...
Hang on, can I stop you there?
Yes.
Is that three separate words?
Yeah.
King Camp Gillette. Gillette. Well, we know Gillette. That's still around. What does King and Camp mean in that way?
That's his name.
His name was...
Yeah, if you're going to invent a safety razor, you better call yourself King Camp. You better have a name to remember, and that's his, yeah.
I don't think I'd call myself King Camp.
No, what did his parents have in mind when they came up with that?
Yeah.
If memory serves, it's the late 19th century. Mm.
And that was pretty much like the one that my dad was using in the early 1950s still.
It's getting that way. What you get first are so-called guard razors, which have a little bit of metal to protect you slicing into your flesh with the thing at the wrong angle. It's one stage safer, shall we say, than the cutthroat. But yes, it's later on, it's gone ridiculous now, isn't it, with safety mesh over them and about 15 different razors. So the Victorians still didn't have it easy.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hi, this is Tony Robinson bringing you my Cunning Cast. If you're enjoying this podcast, please leave a rating or a review. And do take a look at our back catalogue. There's a growing selection of shows there to keep you company. Everything from Census, Coronation, Nights, What the Past Smelt Like, loads and loads. You're going to find something you like, aren't you? Yeah, I'd like to talk to Robin a bit about the modern razor. This huge image in my mind was of unpacking this filler shave. Thinking about it now, we've still got filler shaves. They're still pretty much the same, it seems to me.
Double-edged safety razors are still very much around. So when you think about that one little razor and the bit of metal that holds it down, and it still has a massive cult following. I know that whenever I talk about shaving, be it electric or cartridge, which are more like those sort of Wilkinson Sword or the Gillette, so many men will come in and say, you should be doing it this way. This is how to get the closest, cleanest shave. And they've got a cult following. But also, in terms of having things that are better for the environment, actually having that one cartridge is slightly better. It was also interesting, Alan, when you were talking about King Camp Gillette, because last year Gillette brought back a sort of division in Gillette, which was King Gillette, and it was a traditional product, and it was this sort of more traditional branding. So they were bringing that all back in, because these brands like Gillette, the Wilkinson Sword, Braun for electric and more modern, are massive, and guys are still going towards those.
Mm. I'm puzzled about the whole thing of electric razors. I treated myself at the time when I was doing pretty well because Blackadder was on DVD. I treated myself to the poshest electric razor that I could find, and it didn't seem to me to be any better than the one that I could get for 78 quid at Gatwick Airport.
I mean, some of them are pretty good. After this, I'll send you one. I've got loads of them that are very good.
But hey, this is why you make podcasts. Yep. Sorry, carry on.
This is why you make podcasts. But there's ones by, you know, Braun that use titanium steel. Some of the Japanese technology is amazing with Panasonic. And they've all got interchangeable heads. So I know I've got one. You change the head and it's a toothbrush and it's a hair shaver and it's a body groomer. So they do absolutely everything. So it's making things really easy for guys. And it's making it easy for guys to customize and decide if they want to change just a mustache or a big beard the next day.
Let's go back to our history for a moment. We were heading towards the end of the 19th century. Mm. We'd got these great long beards for intellectual men. I mean, you were talking about outdoorsy men, but it's always puzzled me that people like Huxley had a huge long beard. What did it represent, do you think, in his mind?
Well, it's interesting because the beard, all sorts of spurious meanings become attached to the beard and reasons for growing it, and some of them are health related. So the idea goes around in the press and in books that the beard is nature's protector and a natural filter against dust and germs. So therefore, if you work in dusty trades, it's your mason's best friend or the railway worker's comfort. And they describe it in terms of being the manly appendage or the sort of dangling fronds of manliness. And these are the terms they use. So there's that. And it's an outward symbol of inner, again, heat, but mental strength. So the longer your beard, you're a dude.
Mental strength. Mental That's acuity. Isn't it? And was it the First World War that put an end to that old Victorian notion of facial hair, do you think?
Well, this kind of takes us back to the point we were talking about earlier, is why fashions end as much as why they start. And what tends to happen, because I did a lot of work on Victorian prisoner photographs, and if you're wondering where this is going, just to see what the styles were of lower class men. And actually, there was a lot more variation than we'd think, because we kind of think of the Victorian period as just the massive beards, but a lot of them have got chin strap beards amongst guys of my generation in their 40s, and the beard with no moustache. Some of them, younger guys tended to have moustaches. But as we get to the end of the 19th century, perhaps it's this rejection of the older ideals, they start to go. And the turn of the 20th century, it goes more towards clean-shaven. But the moustache is a military standing order in the British Army until 1915 or 16. You have to grow a moustache because it's an important symbol of a military man.
And what about side whiskers?
Yes, the fashion that hasn't come back, and for me at least, I hope never does. The hipsters have not got hold of side whiskers yet. Maybe they will after that. Have you seen any hint, Robin?
Not many, but you never know.
So, you're in the army in the First World War, and you have to have a moustache. Why do you think they decided you didn't have to in 1915?
Well, basically because Sir Neville Macready, one of the commanders of the British Army, hated having to wear the moustache so much that he shaved his own off and abolished the order. So it was as simple as that. The boss said, no more moustaches.
So coming out of the First World War and into the swinging 20s, what happened then?
Well, then we get, of course, Charlie Chaplin's famous little toothbrush moustache, which one particular Austrian corporal, Mr. Hitler, if you believe the folklore, adopted it for that reason. But you also get that sort of Clark Gable pointy moustache coming in, and Errol Flynn. So again, it's still got those connections, hasn't it, to swashbuckling and a sort of particular version of manliness.
It's interesting that you should say about people like Errol Flynn, because they were so iconic at that time. Do we see that a similar icon coming back today?
It's interesting because I think where we had one or two icons from film and from campaigns, now there are so many, and because people are consuming so much of the media online, we're actually picking and choosing who our icons are by the very people we're following and the very things we're seeing. So it's a bit of an echo chamber of sort of trends. So yes, we are seeing certain things, but I do think that these trends kind of go across groups. They don't necessarily have to be, I am in this group and I have this type of moustache or this beard. And it seems that it's more on a sort of personal identity rather than a group identity.
That must be quite a new thing for European face fashion, I would have thought. Prior to the last 20 years or so, most people did the same thing as their mates, didn't they?
I mean, we do still see it, especially moustaches are coming back, but it really does seem to be quite a queer culture sort of thing. On sort of big nights, you'll see loads of guys with big, thick, bushy chevron 80s style moustaches. So they have come back. But again, asking my audience, only 4% of them said they have a moustache, whereas 67% of them say they've got a beard, and the rest are either stubble or cleanly shaven. So the moustache is still a pocket, but it is, I would say, a growing pocket. Fast forward 5 years, who knows what's going to happen?
It is odd, isn't it? This huge differentiation in practice between women and men as far as their faces are concerned.
I mean, Robin might think differently. I kind of think this is the first period where men have really had a market for their own stuff, and it's become more acceptable. Like, for my father's generation, you would not put on makeup. And, you know, there is a market for male makeup now, isn't there? And there's so much product around now for facial hair that kind of I wonder whether men are thinking, well, let's dive in, let's see what we can do with this, because there's much more opportunity to shape your facial hair. But yes, traditionally, very much a female arena, that sort of attention to the body would have been seen, say, 150 years ago as effeminate.
What about, I was thinking, actually, occasionally, if I'm doing a bit of footage and there isn't a makeup person around, I will actually put on a little bit of makeup now, which I would never have dreamt of doing 20 years ago, because I might be caught by my mates wearing makeup. What shame that would be. But by and large, people don't think that very much now, do they?
It is more acceptable. Is it acceptable? Probably not completely, but there are brands that have sort of created men's makeup. There's Menergy, which is an American brand. There's Warpaint, which is a UK brand. These brands are creating for men. I think when I first started in this 10 years ago, the whole for men thing was very much growing, and it was kind of what brands were doing. If it was a product for men, Bulldog for men, Nivea for men. Whereas then we went and started to go a little bit more gender neutral, but actually it's kind of pushed back towards that for men again. Just by adding the for men and marketing towards men is allowing men to try things in a different way and also be more comfortable in what they're doing.
Your business is called Man for Himself, isn't it?
It is, yes.
What does that mean for you? Because those three words stuck together like that seem to me to have quite a few different meanings.
Yeah, so Man for Himself is all about choice and men exploring kind of what works for them. So really the name was available, so that's the real reason. But it's about giving men options and choices and exploring products and techniques and kind of seeing what works for you, your own choice and your budget.
When you first started out doing this, how were most of your mates wearing their beard hair and their head hair? Was it hipster time?
Yeah, so that was 10 years ago. So we're 2013, yeah, prime sort of hipster time. I mean, I still can't grow a full beard. So for me, it was much like this. But you were seeing those pockets, especially in East London, of the hipster beard and kind of being quite unkempt. And the sort of the big sort of long beard, which we're not seeing so much now. Things are certainly more groomed and sort of more sort of chiseled around the jaw. But it is still changing.
Where do you think the hipster look came from? I know it's one that you bitterly hate.
I don't mind the hipster one. It's the whiskers that would get me, I think. A hipster beard has its moment, but the odd thing is we don't actually really know, because it occurred, or it arrived around about 2012, and the fashion seemed to start around about the time that George Clooney and some others wore beards at the BAFTAs. I mean, he didn't have the hipster beard, and somehow this style emerged. It is, again, a very outdoorsy lumberjack style of beard, and this one is, I think, interesting because it was a global style. So beard styles back in 17th, 18th centuries, 19th century were European, certainly, but here we had Canada, North America, and it really went all over. But we can't kind of pin it to one person. There were some rugby players wearing them, but I don't think we can put it at their door, really.
You look really clean-shaven. Presumably you shaved today.
Do you know what? I did have a shave today in my sort of now what's a once-weekly shave, but my days of being able to grow a beard have gone, unfortunately.
Because
in lockdown, I had alopecia. I had the full dose, the complete hair loss. And so for the total irony of being a beard historian who can no longer grow a beard, has one eyebrow and hairy knees left.
One eyebrow, yes, yeah.
And I raise it, you know, when you necessary.
It is the Roger Moore eyebrow you've got, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes.
The reason that I asked you that wasn't about your alopecia, although I do find it very interesting. Do we know what causes alopecia?
No, it's one of the few things that we really don't know what causes it. For some reason, your body just decides that your hair is the enemy and eradicates it. It's an autoimmune condition, and it can just be little patches, or it can be total hair loss completely, as I had.
And could it grow back again at some time?
Depending on the size, as I understand it, depending on the extent of the hair loss, the more you lose, the less chance there is of it growing back. But, you know, it may.
Talking about the more you lose... Do you have products which help you have a thicker head of hair?
There are products, yeah. I actually did launch a product for thickening, but there are products out there, Minoxidil, Finasteride, all about thickening. So Finasteride is a pill that you would take by prescription, and that basically puts the hair follicle into a growth phase, and Minoxidil's a foam. But you can also use them on your beard. So actually there's been a huge growth in beard growth tools and serums. So companies like Suns, Copenhagen Grooming, they've got these little micro needles that you'd have really for a facial if you went somewhere fancy. You do that across your face, a little bit of serum, and basically they take that follicle from a dormant phase into a growth phase.
Do these serums actually work?
They can do, yeah. So they're a more natural form of minoxidil, which has been proven. But again, in terms of search, the search for beards and rosemary oil has gone up 550%. So rosemary oil was one of those ones that was trending on TikTok around about hair growth and hair thickening. And then it's now being used on beards. So people putting rosemary oil all over their face and again trying to move that follicle into a growth phase.
It is a lovely smell, I have to say.
It is good, yeah.
I was halfway through asking you a question, Alan, and then the most appalling presenter that I am, I just wandered off and asked Robin about something else. The thing I wanted to try and nail down was the frequency of shaving. Mm. And my dad, I keep saying my dad, but my dad is the model for me of what you do with your facial hair. My dad would shave every day. Were they shaving every day in the 17th, 18th, 19th, 20th century?
No. In fact, sort of 17th and 18th century, the lower class men, let's say, probably once a week in time for church, and the hebdomadal shave, which means the weekly shave. So you would shave on a Saturday, ready to appear in church on Sunday. Elites possibly two or three times a week, but they would have a barber to come to their house under contract, so they would just pay them at the end of the month or the year. Yeah, so the idea that because, let's say, when guys do start to shave themselves, the idea that because they can, they do it every day isn't right. And we think, actually, and I'm guilty of this myself, calling the Georgian age a clean shaven age, it's probably more likely a stubbly age, because for two or three days out of every week, guys are not shaving.
I know there was a fashion for stubble some time ago, although Robin's still locked into that fashion. Has it influenced the way we look at grooming, do you think?
Yeah, I would say so. Men certainly aren't shaving every day. I mean, that might be a generalisation, but again, asking the audience, 10% of them shave every day, whereas over 60% of them are doing it once a week or less. So people are sort of maintaining what they have, but they're certainly not going clean shaven.
Hi, I'm taking time out of this excellent chat to tell you how passionate I am about making these history shows for you, and I think it's pretty obvious from my voice most of the time. So if you are enjoying the series, please do leave us a rating or review, and most importantly, please, 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 please follow the series so you know when a new episode's dropped. This also helps to boost our place in the podcast charts. It is, as it were, some kind of, I'm searching for the words, cunning plan. And it ultimately means that we can make more and better episodes for you in the future. Thank you. Now we're back. Before I came in today, I was just going out the house and my wife said, let's have a look at you. And then she passed me the shaver and she said, there's just a few little bits there that you haven't done. She actually didn't want me to go out without a perfect shave. And I didn't think anything about it at the time until we started this chat. And I thought, there is a huge level of judgment about male facial hair, isn't there? Particularly the notion of being clean shaven. Clean shaven means squeaky clean shaven.
There is, but I think now it is more acceptable for men to experiment and to try different things. I mean, certainly having a big, full, unkept beard with sort of hairs everywhere still looks unneat and untidy. But if you've kept it and you're getting regular trims, then I think it's just another way of expressing an experimentation.
Eyebrows is another one. Again, nice. Going back to Time Team, most of the time I was there, most of the older men had eyebrows that looked like they had got 100 tarantulas in them desperately trying to get out. The notion that they could just have snipped them off wouldn't have crossed their minds. Or maybe they even thought that there was something wild and natural about having what seemed to me rather horrible looking eyebrows.
We have so many tools now that will do things like that. You change the head and you can do the eyebrows and they've all got the right sort of grade on it, so you're not going to take them off. But it's same with nose hair and ear hair. Having those little tools that just go up and take away the excess. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing wrong in doing that.
There isn't anything wrong in doing that in my book, other than an awful lot of those ones that take out your nose hairs are more like something that you would trim a hedge with. You can end up blooded and battered after using them. But nevertheless, it is better than sticking a pair of kitchen scissors up your nose, isn't it? Moving on. What about class?
Well, yeah, but I have a pet theory here that we can tell an interesting story of beards through Baldricks. Because if we think of the Baldricks that you've played throughout the Blackadder career, The first Baldric in the very first series was clean-shaved. He's a medieval man, so he would have been probably shaved with a barber quite roughly. Tudor Baldric had his heavy, quite thick Holbein beard, didn't he? But then we move to the Prince Regent's butler and his manservant, Baldric. Again, he's clean-shaven. He has long hair, long greasy hair, but he's clean-shaven. And the final iteration is that Blackadder in the First World War has his officer's moustache, but Baldric is clean-shaven. He's the recruit. So that's the second half of that, of the war. So yeah, this is it. Baldric's tell us a story of beards.
I never realised that. I'm slightly touched and flattered that you recognised it. I think one of the problems for me about facial hair is, like, for blokes, by and large, it isn't makeup. It's actually growing something or cutting something off. It's a very drastic thing to do, and you might do the wrong thing. You might end up with something that makes you look a complete twit.
I mean, now there are things that can stop you from looking like a twit before you go and do it. Filters on social media, on TikTok, on Instagram, aren't just about beauty filters that blur out your face. They've also got ones that can add on facial hair. So in March 2021, there was a huge spike in the no beard filter trend. And that was kind of seeing what you'd look like without a beard or with various different types of facial hair. And that's quite easy as, and they're live filters, so you can put it on as a video and chat to the camera, you can see what it looks like. So it means you can try something and see, does it suit you, or is it something you want to be going to a barber to get done?
A simulator?
Yeah, essentially a simulator.
How, in my ignorance, would you get to it online?
So if you go into TikTok or you go into Instagram, you can just search on effects and you could search no beard filter or moustache or beard, and you can do that. And so many people are doing that. And I think that's why we've got so much choice and people are changing things so often. On TikTok alone, there's been a 95% year-on-year rise in men looking at hashtag men's grooming videos. It's now at 1.6 billion. views, which is incredible.
Well done, mate, for finding that niche.
Yeah.
It's what all of us want to do, and you did it. There's one more thing I want to ask you about, Robin. Mm. This is another memory of my childhood. You get this big tub of Brill cream.
Yeah.
You rub it in your hands, you rub it over your head, then you get your comb and you draw a line halfway between your crown and your ear hole, and then you very slowly and carefully form the parting. Parting or parting? I never know what to say.
Parting.
Parting. I'm a Londoner. I always said parting.
We can do it.
Parting. Yes, but the parting. Will they come back? Have they come back? Do you like them?
Do I like them? No. Actually, barbers were doing hard parts, which was a razor part. So really, instead of you having to draw that in, barbers were getting clippers and they were drawing that line into the head so that you'd always have that line. Now, I had that done once. It growing back is a nightmare. But in terms of product, men are generally going for matte finish, so absolutely no shine. It looks more natural. And they want a natural finish, so products that are moving and not looking like it's been glued down.
I remember, just while you were saying this, I remember my final vision from the way I used to comb my hair was you had so much Brill cream in your hair that when you'd finished combing it, there were little white bubbles between each tooth.
Yeah.
I'm going to leave my audience with that image, except there's one question that I always ask at the end of these podcasts. The word cunning plan is used in this, I'm afraid. Do you have a cunning plan for the future of men's grooming, Robin?
My cunning plan will be to get men to allow themselves to experiment with product and services in grooming.
And how about you?
My first research project was called Do Beards Matter? And that's kind of getting people to say, yes, they do. There's a reason that these things are interesting. It's not just, they're not a quirky side avenue.
No, this is not a quirky side avenue. And every man who's listening, I hope you'll get out there and do something a little bit more daring with your face than you would have done the day before yesterday. If you want to join in the conversation, you can find me on X at Tony Robinson, and you can follow all our podcast news on X and Instagram at CunningCastPod. And please don't forget to follow this podcast so you don't miss a single episode. I'm Tony Robinson. This is my Cunning Cast, produced by Melissa Fitzgerald, and it's a Zinc Media production.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays.
Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.